Welcome to your Sunday Reader. Today we'll be discussing the readings for the 20th Sunday in Ordinary Time. A reading from the book of the prophet Jeremiah. In those days the princes said to the king, "Jeremiah ought to be put to death. He is demoralizing the soldiers who are left in this city, and all the people, by speaking such things to them. He is not interested in the welfare of our people, but in their ruin." King Zedekiah answered, "He is in your power." For the king could do nothing with them. And so they took Jeremiah and threw him into the cistern of Prince Malchiah, which was in the quarters of the guard, letting him down with ropes. There was no water in the cistern, only mud, and Jeremiah sank into the mud. Ebed-Melech, a court official, went there from the palace and said to him, "My lord king, these men have been at fault in all they have done to the prophet Jeremiah, casting him into the cistern. He will die of famine on the spot, for there is no more food in the city." Then the king ordered Ebed-Melech, the Cushite, to take three men along with him and draw the prophet Jeremiah out of the cistern before he should die. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Lord, come to my aid.
Lord, come to my aid.
I have waited for the Lord, and he stooped toward me.
Lord, come to my aid.
The Lord heard my cry. He drew me out of the pit of destruction, out of the mud of the swamp. He set my feet upon a crag. He made firm my steps.
Lord, come to my aid.
And he put a new song into my mouth, a hymn to our God. Many shall look on in awe and trust in the Lord.
Lord, come to my aid.
Though I am afflicted and poor, yet the Lord thinks of me. You are my help and my deliverer, O my God. Hold not back.
Lord, come to my aid. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Hebrews. Brothers and sisters, since we are surrounded by the great cloud of witnesses, let us rid ourselves of every burden and sin that clings to us, and persevere in running the race that lies before us, while keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the leader and perfecter of faith. For the sake of the joy that lay before him, he endured the cross, despising its shame, and has taken his seat at the right of the throne of God. Consider how he endured such opposition from sinners, in order that you may not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, "I have come to set the earth on fire, and how I wish it were already blazing. There is a baptism which I must be baptized, and how great is my anguish until it is accomplished. Do you think that I have come to establish peace on earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. From now on, a household of five will be divided, three against two and two against three. A father will be divided against the son, and a son against his father. A mother against her daughter, and a daughter against her mother. A mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Thank you for joining us this week. Today we'll be discussing the readings for the 20th Sunday in Ordinary Time. And in studio, or actually in two different studios today, you have Dawn. Dawn, do you want to say hello?
Hello, everybody.
And I'm Brian, of course. And we're here to discuss these readings that we heard. One of the things that struck me, Dawn, in these readings, one of the first things that came out to me was, it's the reading, of course, in the Gospel where Jesus says that he's come and he's not come to establish peace, but to establish division. And I thought about that because we're always talking on this podcast how Jesus is about unity and how as a church, as a Catholic church, we're supposed to be people of unity, not people of division.
Right,
and then
yeah.
Here we have Jesus saying almost the exact opposite. And I thought, well, this could really confuse people. Either we've been lying to them for, I think, close to a year now, or something else has been going on in this passage. I'm going to contend that it's something else going on. Others might want to contend that we've been lying to them for over a year, or I guess not over a year, but almost a year now. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was that image of, you know, Christ establishing division and say, well, what is he talking about there? What are we really dealing with here? First of all, one of the things that we need to remember is the mindset of the people who would have heard this passage originally or heard this conversation as it was happening. And one of the things that they thought about the Messiah was that the Messiah would be a military leader who would conquer all these people who had been oppressing the Israelites and bring about a new era of peace. And so one of the things that Christ is saying right here is that, you know, that's not what I'm here to do. I'm not here to bring about this peaceful world. What I am here is to bring about the truth, which is what Christ is about. And that truth, because of the truth, there will be divisions created, because this gospel of love that Jesus is preaching is not easy for everybody to hear.
Right.
It's a lot easier to hear other points of view. It's a lot easier to hear what you want to hear that we're going to have this military leader who's going to, you know, take over all of our oppressors, or that we're going to be, you know, people who are going to be able to dominate other people rather than to be people who are going to, you know, self-sacrifice and surrender and that's be that sort of peaceful person that Jesus was in that sense. And that message is very hard to hear because it was so countercultural and so opposite to what the Jewish people had been expecting of the Messiah that this message ends up creating division amongst people. And even nowadays, in our own world, we can see where being a Christian definitely has a price. There's a price to pay for that in many senses. There are people who are oppressed for their faith in many parts of the world. In America, we don't have that so much, but we do have many instances where it's very difficult to be a Christian. It's very difficult to live by our Christian values when so much of our society doesn't. It's very hard for us to say we don't want to be materialistic when we live in a very materialistic society, for example. Or it's very hard for us to say, you know, really, money and possessions shouldn't be our most important things, but really we should look at relationships when the society we live in judges success based on monetary value or things like that, or, you know, status in the culture. It doesn't base it on, you know, how much somebody loves another person for the most part. And those types of things can create a lot of tension. It can, people can be, you know, very hurt when you try to bring the truth to them that what we're about shouldn't be only financial stuff, or that if you're wealthy, you know, you need to use your money responsibly and you need to share it with people who are less fortunate. Or if you have certain talents, you're called to use those talents not for the betterment of your own self and only your own self, but for the betterment of the whole world. And all these types of messages are very hard to hear. One area that I'm monologuing here, I know, Dad, and I'll let
I will get to
some of your thoughts. But I was reading something the other day on stem cell research, and this whole reading came to mind because I was sitting here reading. It was a scientific article, and it was making an argument for using embryonic stem cells and some of the benefits that could possibly be gained from that, or something like that. But one of the things is, what I sit here and say is, as a church, we've tried to do this many times. You see the bishops speaking out against this, saying that there's also, we need to respect the life, and we believe that life begins at conception. So we can't take something that is human life and just treat it as if it's an animal or something for scientific study. And it's very hard for the church to come forward, or people, Christians, to come forward and say, this is an abuse of science, because so much of our society says, well, you know, there's these small little cells and, you know, what difference do they make when it could cure, you know, cancer or some other disease? But we have to sit here and say, we're about not being for the most people, but for being for all people, including life that can't defend itself or life that might only be one or two or three cells in size, it's still human life. And we have to, you know, stand up and defend human life in that sense. And it can be very difficult. And I think that's one area where, when you look at it, it's created division. Christianity has created division in the world rather than created unity. Now, the goal would create unity if everybody were able to adhere to the gospel message and understand, you know, what it is that Christ is teaching. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And there is evil in this world. And because of that, Christ's message creates division.
I think you're right. Although semantically, I don't know if that we're choosing division or Jesus is choosing division. We're just choosing to be faithful to God, which that decision then results in some controversy. And so I guess some people think, oh, those Christians, they just go out and cause trouble. Now, I'm not saying all Christians are perfect like me, but a lot of times the Christian decision is I'm choosing to be faithful to God. I'm not trying to cause a division in my family and to cause more trouble in the world. So that was just something I was thinking about as I was listening and thinking about what other people think.
Right. And that's exactly it. It's not an issue where we're intentionally trying to create division or go out and try to find trouble. But there's also a notion a lot of people seem to have, and I don't know how this crept in our society. I was doing some reading on this gospel passage, and I found a quote where somebody said, the character that we've made Jesus into has become this non-confrontational, I give hugs to everybody type character. He said, he's a character who's not even worth crucifying.
Yeah.
And I thought about that because, in a sense, a lot of times that's how we think of Jesus as being non-confrontational. And what Jesus here in this passage is saying is, no, it's not that I'm coming to be non-confrontational. And in fact, Jesus was very confrontational with the Pharisees and a lot of the established power at the time. So his goal was not to be non-confrontational, but rather to stand up for what is true and what is right, even when that meant he had to confront somebody. Now, I would say that Jesus always, when he confronted people, did it with love. There's definitely a way we can confront people with love and a way we can confront people with malice. And I don't think Jesus confronted people with malice. He confronted them with love. But that's some of that division. It's not an intentional, I've come to pit people against people because it would be fun to watch fathers fight their sons and mothers go against their daughters. That's not what Christ is saying in this passage. Rather, what he's saying is that if you're going to follow me, it's going to mean that you're going to come into conflict with people, and they might even be people who are in your own family, because what I demand is not what the society as a whole demands or the world demands.
You know, when you were just talking about Jesus, the gospel not being very confrontational, it made me think of, I'm doing a lot of research because most people know I'm a youth minister, and they've recently done this study on young people in America, and they figured out the new concept for them for God is they've named it this moralistic therapeutic deism. And it's exactly that, you know, God is watching us from a distance, but he's not too involved in our life. And, you know, Jesus' message was just about loving others and being happy, and good people go to heaven when they die. And, you know, the central goal of life is just to be happy and feel good about yourself. And I think we do such a disservice when this is the faith that we're passing on to kids today. And so it's good for all of us to remember that the gospel is a challenge. It's not just, you know, we're all happy and everything's fine.
Yes, I agree with you on that. And it is kind of disheartening to hear that's where a lot of the younger generation is beginning to think in terms of God. And I think it's something that hopefully, you know, we can bring back as helping bring a more proper understanding
right.
of what the gospel calls us to and what we're about as Christians, because certainly that's definitely an oversimplification just to simply say that we're about loving people and that's it, or being non-confrontational, or just generally being a good person or a nice person. Now, I know, Don, you said you had some thought on the second reading, and I was wondering if you want to extrapolate on that.
Maybe just a little. You know, it made me think, every time I hear this passage, I think of a movie. Especially, it starts off with brothers and sisters, since we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And that one line makes me think of, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Millions, but it was an English film, and basically this boy who's about 8, his mom dies, and he ends up having all this money that he just finds. And so the older brother wants to spend it, but the younger brother named Damon wants to give it to the poor. And this kid has a special relationship because he sometimes just imagines seeing saints. Like, he'll say, "Oh, Saint Clair." It's really funny. But anyhow, in one of the deleted scenes in the movie that if you rent the DVD, you can go on, this little boy is being chased by somebody else, and he ends up in an attic, and he's really afraid. And so it flips to the scene, and all these saints that he's been, you know, just talking with and asking, "Have you seen my mom in heaven?" They're all there. They make a ring around him, and they're praying for him. And it was just, when I saw that scene, it was so powerful, because there's the one key part is St. Francis is right behind him. He's got his hands folded in prayer. And I think it's just an awesome image, because that's what, for us people that are humans and need to have some idea of what this is going to be like, or what it's like, I thought that was a great representation.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing with that, and that I want to comment on, is that issue of the great cloud of witnesses around us, because oftentimes when we find ourselves in this division that's created because of our beliefs, or when we find that we're not the most popular person because we don't want to go along with the crowd that wants to do something and, or that we find unethical or something, for example, it's good to remember that we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, that there's always the saints, there's everybody in heaven who is surrounding us. Because one of the powers that Satan or the devil has is the ability to make us feel like we're alone.
Yes.
And that's certainly not the case. You know, the devil would like it if we were, because we don't have that support that we need when we're alone. But we need to take that time to, in prayer, but also to remember that we're not in this alone, even though it might feel like it when we're coming up on these moments where there's conflict, or because of our beliefs, we're not able to do something, or we're not able to get ahead in life the way that we would want to. But it's important to know that we're not alone in this, that Christ is with us. But aside from that, which you don't just say aside from Christ, but also the saints are with us, and everybody who's journeyed this path before us. And also there are people who are alive in our physical world today too, who are with us, even though it might not always seem that way. And so I think that's an important image to remember. It's something that also, for me, came up from the latest Harry Potter movie. And maybe you and I can do a podcast on that.
Sounds good.
In our movie podcast or something like that, and we'll talk about that at another time. But I think it is important to remember that we are not in this alone. That while the Christian life will be demanding and there'll be sacrifices we need to do, it'll bring us it'll put us at odds with people at times, that we are definitely not alone in this struggle.
You know, whenever we do evening prayer here at St. Mary's, Father Mull always makes this mention of this, we're not alone saying this prayer. People from all over the world at some point today are praying the same exact prayer. And that, to me, that's the same type of thing, how unifying and remembering, oh, right, I'm not by myself, so I totally agree.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too, when you talk about our liturgy, because evening prayer is part of its liturgy. It's called the Liturgy of the Hours. It's something that, it's supposed to be the prayer of the people, but they make it so complicated that really the only people who pray it are the priests and the sisters, and, you know, maybe a handful of lay people who have their PhD in how to read the office, the divine office. But
which page to be on.
That's right. But one of the things in that prayer is that it is the liturgy itself, whether it be Mass or be a, you know, a funeral service, be a baptism, any form of liturgy, is always invokes all of the communion of saints. There's something at the beginning, usually if you listen to the words of the prayers at the beginning of Mass or the beginning of the Liturgy of Hours, where all saints are invoked. So the people in heaven are participating in this earthly liturgy. It's not just us in the room. So while people are also doing it in other parts of the world and we're unified with them, we're also unified with the saints in heaven who are also praying the same prayer with us. And I think that's also kind of a neat point in the whole unifying experience. Okay, I think that we will wrap up our podcast. And we thank you for joining us this week, and we hope that you will join us next week on your Sunday Reader. Have a good week. God bless.